Dimitris Mitas, Vice President Finance Europe at Global Asset Solutions, joins us on Newtrix this week to discuss the rise of asset management as owners continue to seek advice from independent experts in the wake of the pandemic and the soothing tones provided to lenders. And as travel restrictions ease, the thriving tourism business on Ibiza looks forward to welcoming visitors back to its shores.
A lot of people also want is some new tricks. So hello and welcome to another episode of New Tricks, which is the weekly podcast from New.PR. I say that having not been here last week, but no one's really noticed, so that's fine. Here we are
on the inside.
Pardon?
Well, they noticed on the inside.
Yes, I'm sure they did too. And we were just discussing Catherine's plans for a facial tattoo to mark her Europeanness. So welcome, Catherine. I haven't seen you for a while. How are you?
Good. And you can see me, so you can see that I have not had it done yet. But I give you significant consideration, a full European flag facial tattoo.
The threat is real, and we look forward to hearing your future plans for that.
You can have like one of the stars, so I should have the stars all the way round. Or I should have like one of the stars where my mouth would be, so I can go ooh like that, and that would be one of the stars. I could, or with my eyes as well. There are many options, and I should be looking into all of these.
And if there are any budding tattoo artists listening who have any creative solutions for this glorious, glorious, yes, please do write in.
Yes. So question whether I should get it done before or after Berlin, and will I be able to use the EU line with passports if you can, if I do that?
All these questions. It's not, a tattoo is really is for life, isn't it? Not just a passing fad craze.
I'd get a full facial tattoo if I could use the EU line at passports.
There we go.
Any plans for any facial tattoos?
Interesting. They're thinking, what have I signed up for
anymore?
Just to introduce Dimitris with some context. So our guest this week is Dimitris Mitas, who is the Vice President Finance for Europe at Global Asset Solutions. Dimitris, thank you very much for joining us. Have you got any plans for any tattoos at the moment?
Thank you very much for asking me to join your team, your funny team. No, not really. No tattoos. Not yet, at least. But I'm taking suggestions. Eh?
Exactly. By the end of this podcast, it could all be so different.
Exactly. So you have an election looming, Catherine. What can you share with the group about the looming French elections?
Yes. Well, what I can share with the group is I'm not allowed to vote in them. So whatever happens, I can't be blamed. So the French like to have an election poll poll about the election every 20 to 23 minutes. So while the time that we're recording this, there will be another three or four different opinions for us to all enjoy. But last thing we heard was that the polls were narrowing between Le Pen and Macron. It's a two-step election here in France. So the first week, so this Sunday, you'll be able to go and go, yes, I love fascism, safe in the knowledge that if Macron makes it through the runoff, then everyone will be voting for him, hopefully, because that's when the adult voting comes into play. Of course, if he doesn't make the runoff, this is the risk that everyone must take. So it's so intriguing times. It's fascinating to see, because from the outside view, which is largely the view that I have of French politics, you see the international view, which is Macron being very serious and talking to Putin all the time and being well-dressed and well-connected, where, of course, the domestic view is that they just all loathe him because he's the president, so he must be loathed all the time. Very bad man. Bad, hate him, let's not vote for him, awful, everyone you talk to hates him. So it's interesting to see which way this goes, because, you know, the alternative is as ever, Marine Le Pen, who she seems to have some views that I wouldn't necessarily think would play out well on the global stage.
You are so diplomatic.
Well, she knows I live here, so she gets here, didn't bother.
That's true.
So who knows which way it'll go? It's the popular vote is that it's Macron's to lose, but you never know what happens in the privacy of the voting booth, do you?
And it's Sunday, the election, is that right? Or that's round one?
Sunday, round one.
Ding, ding. Excellent. We remain gripped. Dimitris, where to go from that, really? What's the political stage like? You're in sunny Ibiza, is that right?
Correct. Although it's not very sunny today, but it's raining, but it will become sunny very soon. And for good, for a long period.
In these uncertain times, it's good to hear about some certainty.
It is, and particularly weather-related certainty. But on matters beyond weather-related certainty, that is traditionally a hugely popular tourist destination. How is it looking? Are tourists coming back? Is there a domestic market, or has it been crushed sort of by the lack of international travellers?
Now, tourism is expected to work very well this year on the island. All hotels are opening and are increasing rates, which is really positive. A lot of airlines are starting their routes to their flights to the island, and they are connecting the island even more and more this year because everybody is expecting a real boom on the tourism. The domestic flights as well, they are increasing. Spanish, they want to travel. Actually, everybody wants to travel after what we've been through during 2 years, the last 2 years with the pandemic. I must say that last year it worked quite well, the island, although only the 60% of the hotels were open, but those hotels managed to increase their rates and their revenues a lot.
60%, did you say?
60? Only 60%. Yeah, only 60. However, I mean, everybody wants to come to the island, and mainly wealthy tourism. That's the good thing. The wealthy tourism is taking advantage of the island.
Yeah, luxury does seem to have thrived, doesn't it, during the pandemic?
Yeah, exactly. And what we're expecting is, of course, to have more British clients. We didn't have so many last year because of the pandemic and all the stuff. We had more Dutch, German, which is not normal. Ibiza, it's a UK, it's a British island. And we're waiting for all the British to come back.
And they're still, the British are still required, aren't they, this Easter to be vaccinated, aren't they, within a certain time scale? Is that the case for Ibiza? It's for Spain, isn't it?
They are supposed to be vaccinated, exactly. But okay, little by little, you know, everybody wants the tourists, so they are just lifting a lot of measures. But vaccination is necessary for the airlines, maybe, but once you are here on the island, they don't check it anymore.
Yeah, don't try to lick anyone.
I'm fascinated, I guess, because we saw, didn't we, during the pandemic that the residents of Venice were thinking, you know, not that they were particularly enjoying the pandemic, but it did mean that they got their Venice back and it wasn't overrun with dirty, smelly tourists. How do the sort of the local people in Ibiza view tourism? Is it a bit of a relief when it dies down a little bit, or is there a recognition that it supports the various sort of micro economies that roll around tourism?
They're both, but I must say that mainly, of course, the 90% of the inhabitants here, they live out of tourism. So without tourism, they cannot live anymore. A lot of people had invested prior to the pandemic. They invested, for example, even the taxi drivers on new taxis, the owners of hotels on their properties, the owners of houses who are rent to the staff of the hotels, they invested on their houses. Everybody invested related to the tourism. So this is something they missed, and they missed definitely the tourists. They are really eager to have them back and make some money because, of course, they have been living from their savings these 2 years, a lot of people. There is a minor part, of course, who managed to enjoy the island without tourism. There was a beauty, of course, because totally different when it's summer and you don't see anybody on the beach. There is some beauty for the locals, but the 90% of the Ibiza guys, everybody's waiting for the tourism to come back. On top of that, this year, the clubs are opening again officially. So you can imagine what will happen on the island.
Oh, I'm sure it will be just
as they say here.
I can imagine, yes. So we've sort of talked about tourism as a whole. It would be interesting to get your views on how the role of an asset manager has changed during the pandemic. I think this has been, and I'm sure will continue to be, quite an interesting talking point. So at the risk of asking you 12 questions in one, could you, as a sort of overarching statement, how has, to your mind, the role of an asset manager changed?
Yeah. First of all, during the pandemic, of course, everybody was trying to drop their costs. So the operator was the hotels. The owners were trying to drop their costs on staff wise because there were not so many clients, and the operators as well. They were freezing contracts or terminating contracts of their staff on the corporate level. So somehow there was a lack of communication, a lack of management. The owner needed to drop the cost and make more money. The operator was not there to help that much because they had to face their problems and they needed somebody to help them. Who was supposed to help? Like always, when there is a crisis, the asset managers. The asset managers were there and they start being very, very popular all of a sudden. Everybody wanted to have an asset manager. We have received a lot of requests, actually, of people who were trying, who wanted to see their revenues increases, find new ideas, think out of the box, use the technology. And that's what the asset manager was there to do. Additionally, they had to negotiate with the banks because, of course, as you know, there were a lot of hotels, they have their loans. Somebody had to pay that. We had to negotiate with banks. So there was a big need, a big demand for asset managers. And there is an important role to play on that.
It's interesting that kind of financial aspect of asset management that I don't really associate with asset management. We sort of have been taught that asset management is about being able to source kind of cheap bulk orders of toilet rolls. Whereas now, as we see more sort of M&A and are likely to see more coming up, the role of the asset manager in the whole deals bit is something that I hadn't really heard about before. So probably being horribly naive, but it's interesting to hear that.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, I mean, we have even received a lot of, there were some funds which are investing in Europe. They wanted somebody to help them to clean their books. We were there to help them with that. All of a sudden, we were not there only to increase the ADR, but I mean, the asset manager actually is there to take care of the asset, to give it value. And this way, the owner can do whatever he wants afterwards. I mean, to resell it. We have seen that people who were reselling after cleaning their books, we are adding value actually to the property. And that's why they were asking us to help.
Dogs just come to join the podcast.
The dog is always interested in different ways that you can increase the value of hotels. It's one of his core specialisms, isn't it, Spuds? Yes.
I have often looked at him and thought, there's a dog that knows how to really extract value.
Oh yeah, he knows how to sweat the asset, this one.
Hotel real estate, absolutely. Why is it important, Demetrios, that in that role, the asset manager is independent?
Because first of all, we have two parties here. We have the operator and we have actually the owner. Each one has his own interest. It's really important to have an independent company which knows the hotel industry and try to find a balance between those two parties. That's the first thing. Second thing, a lot of times, I mean, we are in a financial world. The hotel is a company. So a lot of lenders are involved into that. And the lenders would like always to have an independent view of the industry, of the company, before investing, before accepting a loan. So that's why this is really important to have somebody who is independent, in order not to be on one side, but to find the right thing from both sides in order to get the correct profitability and benefit for each side.
Can we just talk about that, the lenders bit, a little bit more? Because, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that something that has increased during post, depending on where you think we are in the pandemic life cycle, is the need for lenders or the request for lenders to have an independent asset manager as terms and conditions of the deal? Is that something that you're seeing increase?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, the lenders, first of all, they have been all of a sudden, the companies, the owners, they were needing some money. They were the lenders, they had the banks or whoever, they had to lend their money. And to do so, they wanted to have an independent view of the property and the future of the company, of the property. They want to have some forecasts. Who else can give those forecasts other than an asset manager, somebody who knows very well who knows very well the industry, who knows very well how this will work, how to make it work, and what will come up. That's why they needed somebody independent in order to make sure that the decisions they are made, they are correct and they are not biased.
Very, very wise. What about another thing that we've seen quite a lot of during the pandemic, and I guess is something that's probably not too much of a new thing for asset managers, but this focus on looking at revenue per square foot as opposed to this is my F&B space, this is my bedroom space, these must all be the little silos that we put things in. How do you work with owners and properties to sort of help them in that area?
The owner, when he builds a house, when you build a house and you sell it per square meter. So that's something which we should apply also in the hotels as well. I have so many square meters and I have to sell them. We have been applying that up to now in the banqueting department. When you sell a banquet room, we always say, okay, this is so many square meters. That's the amount I would sell it, the rate I would sell it per square meter. But we don't apply to the rest of the hotel. And this is something which we are, which is something that the owners are asking for more and more. How we do that? There are so many ways to make money out of your building, and not only of the traditional form of the rooms, the F&B, or the recreation. I will give you an example that we have seen in some hotels having some antennas on the rooftop and renting the space of the rooftop, which of course usually is used for, sometimes is used for maintenance reasons or for the machinery. So you can install an antenna and make money out of something which you cannot give it to the guest. Of course, if you have the possibility to have a pool there, it's always much better. But if you don't, it's one possibility. On another hotel, we have seen that we had a projector on the facade of the hotel, and we were using that for advertisement. So there are so many ways to find possibilities to increase the revenue. But of course, the revenue is not the only way of increasing it by the antenna or by the facade. There are other possibilities by upselling, by whatever. There are many possibilities to increase your revenue, because at the end of the day, what we want is to increase the total revenue of the company. And we should be really very, we should think out of the box on how every single square meter can be increased. The revenue can be increased.
Do you ever worry, as you were saying that, which were all brilliant creative ideas, and I got lost a little bit then in dreaming of a rooftop pool, sort of glorious. I won't show you the view from my window. It is very grey and it's very unpleasant. So my mind was drawn to warmer, sunnier climes. But that aside, do you ever, as part of the asset management role, it's a huge amount of information that you're sharing, imparting, and education. And I wonder whether it's ever likened to you sort of teaching a child. You know, you teach them to put their shoelaces on and to sleep and to eat, and then at some point the child just goes, "I'm leaving now. I can go off into the wild all by myself."
Do you ever grown up?
Exactly. Do hotels ever turn around to you and go, "Thank you very much. We are now grown ups and we don't need you anymore"?
Well, but there's always something to learn.
I think this is true. Or a pandemic that comes along that makes us exactly need to learn even
there
more.
There is always need. There is always need for an asset manager, because an asset manager sets us limit the sky. So there is always something good to do. There are always ideas there. For example, the technology. The technology has been used so much now in the last years. And the asset managers, I mean, we try to apply that in one of our hotels, or to be environmental friendly. You see, we don't only limit ourselves in the ADR or the financial part, but we also see how we can attract markets which are sensitive to something, the environment, or to use the technology which can help the hotels. So there is always something new to apply in a hotel.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I guess that's the joy of the operational real estate bit, isn't it? It has so many more components than, I refer you back to the joy of a shed. Less joy in a shed, more joy in a hotel, more things to think about. Catherine, I'm whittering on, sorry, you've just had to deal with the dog. Is the dog all right?
He's all right. He was bored, so I gave him some food, and now he's gone off to kill it in another room because it must be killed before it can be eaten. It's like a chicken stick. So, yeah, he's gone to kill it. Now he will eat it. This will please him.
The dog is planning the holidays, for the summer holidays on a rooftop, most probably.
He loves the summer holiday on a rooftop. So he's got lots of aspiration. He's extraordinarily well travelled, actually, for dogs. Yes. he does prefer a seaside. He very much enjoyed Cannes last year, for example. So, yes.
Whilst we're dreaming of sunnier climes, this may be an opportune moment to ask you about your most memorable hotel experience. Could you share that with us this cheerful Monday morning, please?
The most memorable hotel experience. This was in a hotel in Spain. I remember when I arrived in Spain almost 20 years ago. I have heard from the very beginning that the company where I was working for wanted to sell this hotel, this property. But it never happened. The best thing was that when I took over the original role, a year later, we managed to sell this hotel. This was a big event in my company. I will never forget that. On the 12th of December, we managed to sell this hotel after 10 years saying that, yeah, you will see, we will sell it next month. We are selling it next quarter. We are selling it. And this was a big event, actually. I remember they invited me to England, my managers, to celebrate it. So it was really important for the company and really important for me to manage to do something which for 10 years they didn't manage to do it. This was really memorable.
What changed after 10 years?
But we found the right investor, and we presented the right figures, most probably.
That'll do it.
But this was really, really important, I remember, at that moment. I mean, I will never forget, I mean, afterwards, awards from the company, et cetera, et cetera. But I will never forget on the 12th of December in 2012 when I went there and I signed this contract myself. It was really an amazing moment.
Very amazing. We round off these jolly podcasts with some questions that we ask everyone. And I might hurtle towards those because I think we've talked about all the things that we had, again, in our vast preparation for these things, said that we would talk about. Unless there is anything else that you would like to mention, or Catherine, that you think that needs to be shared.
Not shared, I don't think.
Stunned silence.
Yes, it's a Monday morning is a bit too much for sharing, I think. Later.
Okay, come back to you later for the sharing. Yeah. Right, I'm going to plough on with these questions then. Demetrius, have you got two more minutes for us?
Yes, of course.
Perfect. Okay, so the first question. When the shutters came up and I had the jabs in my arm, the first thing I did was...
I live on a small island, so the first thing I did at that time was to go and stare at the sea for hours. Although I was working next to the sea, but without thinking of what to do anymore, just staying there under the sun, staring at it.
Did you have pretty hideous lockdown restrictions? Because certainly mainland Spain and Italy had horrendous.
Mainland, yes. Oh, where I live, it's a small village on top of that. Ibiza, first of all, is a small island. In the winter, there it's not crowded at all. But on top of that, where I live, it's a small village. So I could go out almost every day. First of all, I was going to my work every day to my office. So I didn't really feel this restriction like anybody or like the others, like my friends in the mainland. But I'm telling you, the first thing when I had some time, I just went there staring at the sea on a rock. It was really beautiful.
We were doing nothing.
And of course, afterwards, we started going out for beers, et cetera, little by little.
Yes. And did you remember how to do drinking beer okay outside? That will come flooding back.
I needed some help, but I've managed to find my bearings on that.
Excellent. I'm relieved to hear it. Very good. Okay, the next question is, the best thing about the hotel sector is?
The guest contact and the relationship one can build up with them. It's not boring at all. It's really beautiful when you have this possibility to speak with the clients and to share with them their lives, because they feel like sharing lives at that moment when they are at the hotel. It's really beautiful, this guest contact we can have.
The hotel sector would be significantly improved if
we invest more on technology. Actually, I think it can improve much more the benefits. There are possibilities nowadays. There is the opportunities here after the pandemic that we have to use the technology. So I think it's the right moment to use more the technology. But not that much, because we should never forget that we are a guest company. We have guests and we have to give this personal touch, this guest contact. So we should invest in technology, but not, we shouldn't be really a technology-only company.
Absolutely. There's a blend and a balance to be found, isn't
Correct.
There?
Correct.
What the industry needs now is
to improve the employee conditions. We have a big problem at this moment. In Europe, it's quite difficult to find staff. People, they don't want to work after the pandemic. They had the possibility to think a lot of their lives, and they don't want to work that much in the industry. Why? Because they want better conditions. So I think this is the right moment to see how we can invest on employees who are our assets. And this can be not only through salaries, this can be also through conditions, through trainings. There are so many conditions. People, they don't want only money to be happy.
Mm. Although money is good.
Although money is good, of course.
Does help with the rooftop bar drinking.
It does.
Yeah.
And finally, I'd like to think we've learnt from this.
We learned to be more environmental friendly. We learned to respect the environment. This is really important. Hotel industry needs the environment. We saw what happens when there is a catastrophe like a pandemic or whatever. So the environment is really important for us. People are more and more looking for green solutions, and we should learn to apply them.
Very wise.
Right, you know.
I think I fear so. This is the thing. Needs to be done, as witnessed by the snow across most of Europe in April.
Correct. I remember when I was doing my master in the UK, I had to make a thesis for the environmental friendly hotels, and the 3 R's, reduce, reuse, recycle, was the most important thing in this cycle.
There you go. It is very much a thing. Well, that concludes our podcast for today, and it's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much. I feel immensely grateful to you for taking us out of our dreary Monday morning sort of slump and into beautiful Ibizan sunsets or sunrises. And I would like everyone to take that mental image and enjoy it for the rest of the day.
It's been an absolute pleasure for me. I'm waiting for you here in Ibiza. Have a cocktail next to the sea.
Very nice.
We'll be there for the fiesta.
For the fiesta. Okay.
Exactly. happy political observing, but not participating, Catherine. I hope it's joy.
I'm like one of those like people you get from the UN who has to go to Africa and see if people are doing things correctly in the right boxes.
I've often thought that. Yes.
I think I would like that.
And many thanks to everyone for listening. As always, do like and subscribe or whatever it is you're supposed to do on social media. And we'll do join us again for the next episode. Many thanks. Bye-bye.
Many thanks, Demetrius.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So that concludes our thoughts for this week. Thank you to everyone involved in creating this episode and providing something for your ears whilst walking the dog, washing the cat, chopping the veg, or however else you pass the time while podcasting.
Please do review and subscribe if you get your ear entertainment via Apple, or follow New Tricks if your ear delight comes from Spotify. These things make a difference, apparently. Until next time.